So again, there's an immediate relationship. It doesn't sound exactly the same, but this has to do with your decisions as an orchestrator, as a composer. You've just taken that file, that part, as you've derived it, and then you do something completely different with it. So I remember that it's taken me a while when I listen to this exa to these examples, it's taken me a while to actually realize that this is the same file. I've listened to it a few times and I said, oh, actually it is. It's in fact more than 50%. It's probably veering towards 100%, but it's just been really reorchestrated to make it sound completely different.
Absolutely. And I try to keep, for example, the percussion element, for example, which actually was stripped away when I did the filtering. I sort of, used that as well because I really liked it, so I kept it. And then I just wanted to have this kind of massive sound coming down. And therefore, I use this kind of filtering. I mean, up to a certain point, it's like working on the on a studio. Up to a certain point, like if you would work in an electroacoustic studio, manipulating sound, but sort of orchestrating it. So it's working, let's say, with acoustic composition in the same way as you would in the electroacoustic medium, let's say.
Right. It's very interesting. Let's go on to the next technique because the next example actually provides us with another insight to a different technique. It's similar the way you've used it in Esferica, but actually the first electronic process is different. Let's just listen to it first and explain what it is. Was the process there?
That was some sort of very primitive morphing
Between two s
between two
separate
sound files.
samples.
So basically, it was two sound files that were bugged. Again, I'm gonna use the word bugged
Okay.
because
It's fine with me.
and it was at the beginning boredoms, and then it sort of morphed into Radiohead.
What is the actual technical process of morphing them? What do you
It's
use
a
there?
sort of Xenakis technique,
What does he do?
which is basically, well, taking a sound and then transposing it down and also making it softer, while the other sound is actually being transposed up to its normal.
So you're saying up and down, you mean amplitude?
No, in terms of frequency,
Aha.
but also amplitude. The first object gets from louder to softer,
Right.
like, and the other one from softer to louder. But there is also a frequency thing there, that it's going. I'm transposing it down until it gets very low when it's
And you can't
softer,
hear it basically anymore?
and then the other one is the other way around.
Interesting. Let's listen to that again. So this is pretty much all boredoms.
And those cuts are Gabrieli.
I see.
When there's silence. Like that. And now boredom's going down and Radiohead is slowly coming up. Radiohead is going up. And that is the sort of not the original
Right.
that was already bugged.
As it were. Very nice. Let's listen to what you've done with that in the actual piece. It sounds very different. I'll just let people know, because there are a lot of parts which are superimposed on this, if I'm not mistaken. So it doesn't sound exactly the same, but you'll notice what I mean, I think. That the end there is almost orchestrated like the original, in fact. Yeah. It's really interesting. So the percussion parts
the
are, of course...
The bassoon being Thom Yorke, of course.
Aha! Uh-huh. How can it ever be? There's no... I think it should have been a kazoo, personally. But, okay, you know, each into their own. Let's listen to that original, just to give people... this is from Amnesiac, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. I don't remember.
Okay, it's funny because it seems that nerds who are into the stuff that you and I are into also are really related to the Radiohead fan club. Everybody likes Radiohead. Have you noticed that nerds and Radiohead really go together?
Yeah, that is true. I think...
Maybe it's because Radioheads themselves are a bunch of nerds.
They are, absolutely. Yeah. Johnny Greenwood, especially.
Oh, God, what a nerd. Let's listen to this.
Once again, trouble with my old friend. She is paper in the windowpanes.
I guess people recognize the track. So that's interesting, because some of the quotes that you make in the piece, you've not even tried to hide them, which is really nice. I think that we'll notice this later with one of the examples, per se, because you just really transcribe one of the parts straight into the score. But this same Radiohead has been morphed and changed and gone through kind of processes. Let's see what you do with that. So that's the first generation. That's simply the same technique again?
Yes.
Okay. Thom Yorke still sounding whiny, notice, after the change of sample rate. I like that. This is in the piece.
Well, and then there's a lot of other things happening there as well. I mean, but you can hear the Radiohead quote.
Radiohead goes on, actually. This is not the last example. We have some more parts. Let's listen to the rest. So that's very short. Same technique.
Yeah.
But you've done something completely different with this one. This sample is used. You've derived only the piano part from that. You've changed it. It's gone through a generation. And from that, you've derived the piano part and just written it down in MIDI and recorded that. So it sounds like this.
Beautiful general MIDI.
Oh, It's one of the most beautiful sounds.
Yeah, this is pretty much just a transcription, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's listen to that again. But note that this is already a transcription that you yourself made of a track that was tampered with.
Yeah, correct.
Right. What happens to that transcription? Something else. You've tampered with that, with the MIDI itself. You've tampered as well.
This time, I again, was one of those moments of composition.
The wind came and gave you inspiration.
Exactly. And basically, I just thought that the piano would just go down in frequency.
And it sounds something like this. Oh, it's lovely.
Doesn't it sound great?
It does, really. But it sounds even better, I think, in Esferica. Listen to this. Where did that stuff, all that stuff
Yeah, the
come
other
from?
Stuff was using that kind of same spectral gating technique. But I had this idea that, you know, this kind of, nervous kind of woodwinds would go up while the piano would go down.
Mm. That's what we heard with Ella Fitzgerald before. That was the example that we...
Yeah.
So you had this kind of very pointillistic high frequency kind of noise...
Yeah,
which later becomes some of that stuff. Let's listen to that again, just to give you an example. Beautiful. Next one is Matmos. That's the next example. You've actually used them quite extensively in the piece.
Yeah. And they make some of the most obvious kind of quotations almost. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's something that I was also thinking is that actually the more that you process a sound file, the sort of more abstract it becomes, the less recognizable it becomes from the original.
Right.
So I was, you know, also playing with this kind of degrees of let's say, abstraction mm-hmm. from quotation to abstraction that almost sometimes sounds modernist in the sense that, you know, it sounds like I just made that up with some sort of serial technique or whatever, but it's just abstract because it's the process is taking over the actual material.
Right. Well, let's listen to what happens here with Matmos. I think this is the original. Here you've really transcribed something. You've taken the original track, and in this example, the first example at least, because Matmos you use quite extensively in the piece. Let's just listen to the first example. So that was the original, and in the concert it sounds something like this. So there is a transposition or something.
Yeah, it's been transposed, of course, by Gabrielli, who's always there, right?
Always there.
But yeah, again, like a lot of other things are going on at the same time, but this is quite recognizable as well.
I mean, right, but this you did yourself. This wasn't a process that happened electronically. You've just you've taken the Matmos and you've actually done this by hand. You've just transposed it on the score itself.
Yeah.
Interesting. And everything that happens around that theme. Da, da, dee, da, beep, ba,
yeah, that's, I mean, that's all of the other kind of things, you know, the Björk and the Elle Fitzgerald and the Radiohead in different amounts of processing, let's say, that are sort of, you know, all around sort of living in a kind of, you know, strange mutant world.
So this is an important part of the piece, I would assume.
Yeah,
this is
absolutely.
One of these Keplerian moments.
Yeah, that's when, you know, everything's happening, actually. And then later on, this same kind of things will come back, but either isolated or, you know, kind of...
the same motifs,
theorized,
you mean.
Yeah.
And this next example is Matmos again. Let's just listen to you'll know the stimulus already by now, but let's listen to what happens to it again. Thank you. second generation.
This is, well, been not only band pass filtered, but also transposed by Gabrielli.
Mm-hmm. And that becomes this wild thing. Spectral gating.
Yeah. Can still hear the matmos.
That's right. And this becomes in concert. Well, this is not the only musical material that we'll hear, but we'll hear it with something else. Listen to this. So the piano part at the beginning that was still related to the same Radiohead?
Yeah, correct.
But everything that happens above that is this kind of regenerated
matmos. Yeah, in the woodwinds, I guess, and the violin. I think they were actually really hard to play that part because, you know, the rhythms are very tricky.
Mm. Well, on to our next one. This is another matmos sample. Listen to this.
This is being transposed by Gabrielli, but if you noticed, it's not. I mean, the rhythm is changing as well, which is basically I'm just affecting the rate of the playback of the sound file.
Mm.
So when it gets higher, it gets faster, and when it gets slower, it slows down according to the Gabrielli transposition.
Clever. And the next one does this, again, the second generation of the same file. Still there.
Still there, yeah.
And it becomes this thing in the concert version.
So that actually happens right at the middle of the piece. That is where you had actually the matmos, very recognizable theme, which is the same as this one.
Right, just before that.
Yeah, and then there's a bang. There's a, you know, like a percussive thing, which is kind of symbolizes the, you know, the middle of the piece.
Saxophone quartets give their initial first slap.
Yeah,
of the piece, and actually this is a very important mention because this is a concerto for a saxophone quartet.
Oh, yes. This is
interesting.
This is a concerto for a saxophone quartet and ensemble, basically.
Right.
The thing is that you don't really hear much of them.
I noticed that it's very sparse writing for the saxophone. Is this an ideology or?
Well, it's a kind of, you know, an anti-concerto or something like that.
Right. But it was actually commissioned as a saxophone quartet concerto.
Yes,
it was. To be played, if I remember correctly, because it was premiered in a concert in which Licks and Brains by Klaus Toltensen was played.
Yes, correct.
So
it's the same instrumentation.
Right. Yeah. And his is really a concerto for ensemble and saxophone quartet.
Yeah. But so is mine.
Right. Good. Good to know.
Before we go on, I just wanted to comment a little bit on that, what we just heard. I was just saying that at that middle point of that bang, what's, you know, the sort of natural world starts to become observed and reduced. And in a way, I mean, basically the music just continues, but just suddenly it's relegated, which is what we heard.
Mm.
And but you can hear some sort of sense of continuity. It's just like it's very, very abstracted what was going on before. And up to a certain point, I also orchestrated in a way that was almost almost pointillistic, in the sense that that you hear all of the different instruments just playing bits of the spectra that was left from what was happening before that. And it sounds almost, you know, almost like some sort of vavern or something like that. It's very, you know, just single notes. But it's actually, you know, Matmos and all of the other references just really being sort of, you know, reduced to the sort of minimum.
Right. So this is the stimulus stays the same, but it's a reduction. As you said, this is the point in the piece in which supposedly chaos, nature becomes not only observed, but in a way formalized.
Yeah, and abstracted. Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Up to our next example, which is the last in the Matmos set of examples. Again, a MIDI technique. It's not derived actually from the file. This is a rescoring of yours to MIDI. So what we hear is...
Well, it's just a sort of transcription of the Matmos. Yeah.
So the first generation of that would sound like this.
And that is our general MIDI that we love, of course.
Oh, man. What would I do without it? And this becomes the following. Really doesn't need to be explained. Kind of self-explanatory. No, that's pretty, what happens there.
Pretty obvious.
And in the piece itself, it would sound so. Pitched materially, I should mention, is we've already heard that before in one of our examples, but the
Radiohead and the piano going down, and then the other. So it's like all of the materials are, you know, up to a certain point being isolated, but still in at different points of abstraction. Let's say.
And the Matmos, of course, creates that percussion pattern.
Yeah, exactly.
The one we just heard. Well, which leaves us with the complete, the ultimate, the last example for today, before we hear a Sferica Cantandote again. This is Gabrieli itself. You've decided that the last quote of the piece, as it were, the last derivative material of the piece would be this blueprint in excelsis that you've used throughout the piece, is used at the coda. For those of you who listened to the piece at first and thought, oh, this coda seems completely different than what we've heard before, this is actually because it's derived from the Gabrieli. You've decided to use this in the end. Obviously, this is a great coda. I mean, this is just...
Yeah, well, basically, it's a sort of, you know, the Gabrieli was always there up to a certain point.
Right.
And at the end, it's just, you know, being exposed in its sort of more straightforward kind of way. But nevertheless, it's slightly processed. So, which means, you know, you don't really get fully there, but almost.
Right.
I mean, basically what I mean is that, you know, Gabrieli was up to a certain point in the piece, you know, some sort of thing that would hold everything together.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, you know, again, like a theory that at the end is sort of exposed in its, you know, in its original, almost original form. But I decided to not do it completely, you know, as written in the score or whatsoever or orchestrated, because I think it's a sort of commentary up to a certain point. The theories cannot quite, they don't achieve they cannot explain, let's say, the natural world up to a certain point.
Mm-hmm. And you've decided to tamper with this Gabrielli, the initial sound file as well, but I think it's the most recognizable, well, except maybe that quote from Matmos, but that quote from Matmos is kind of masked by other stimulus that's in the area.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on.
And this one is just there. It's like sort of a chorale at the end of the piece, and it's the only material. And it's also
how it happens in terms of the piece, like when it happens, it's also quite important,
right?
Well, not only it's at the end, but also what happens before sort of almost prepares you to for that moment.
Let's listen to, well, first the initial Gabrielli that you've used for this. And the next generation of that will be also a spectral gating, I think, but it's very, very slight. It's very obviously leaves the original quite heard. Let's listen to that. So there it is, quite recognizable, changed, but quite recognizable. And then, of course, the coda of Sferica Cantandote. Very beautiful, beautifully orchestrated as well. I think it's very different from the original, but it's a great way to end a piece, I think. I'll try to nick that from you. But just before I play Esferica again, and I thank you, Federico Ruben, I think that it's quite interesting to go through this process, and I hope that the listeners have gone through this process with us, because to me, it validates the life and work of a composer much more, just from the pure sense of people thinking, obviously, that, oh, well, here's a technique again. Every composer has a technique. Every composer has his own little intricate way in which they derive notes from a theorem or a technique or a way of work, even. And for me, it's interesting because we see where this technique ends. So, for instance, where you've stopped doing the technical work of tampering with files and deriving what kind of material you do through FFTs, but then you actually put that in a score and you make loads of decisions. And basically, these decisions are the decisions that make Sferica Cantandote, and set it aside or apart from many other pieces that I think would be related to what one could call a spectral school. It doesn't really resemble, for those who know spectral pieces, it doesn't really resemble what spectralists out there are trying to do in any way. In fact, I don't think that this relates to anything that I've heard before. It's quite unique.
I mean, something that I would say that is quite different in terms of spectralism is that, for example, I'm not that interested, how to put it, in taking apart a sound,
dissecting the sound,
dissecting it.
Yeah.
But more, I'm more interested in using this kind of techniques that are normally ascribed to sound for actually musical material, which to me has a much more sort of complex symbolism than an isolated sound itself. So in a way, I think it's, for me, I mean, I do want my music to relate to some sort of, you know, certain cultural things and certain, you know, to the outside world, which I think that other pieces of music do that much better than, let's say, isolated sound material.
Right.
Which is, yeah, it's different, I guess.
Well, in a way, that's very interesting. And in a way, irrelevant, I would say, which is a great thing, because I heard Esferica for the first time unknowing of all of this, and I thought that it was brilliant, and I just thought, wow, I really didn't hear anything quite like this before, and it shocked me.
Yeah, yet it's filled with the quotations and stuff like that, which is kind of ironic.
I have to say that I didn't know the material as well. I wouldn't have recognized the Matmos just because I did not know it before we started working on this show. I remember that our composition teacher at the time, Richard Ayers, recounted to me that he wasn't quite sure what you were trying to do. And which is a strange thing, because I wasn't really bothered. I was just exhilarated by the music. But I hope that maybe some people who had listened to Esferica at the beginning of the show and asked themselves, what the hell is going on? Maybe they have a better idea. And maybe this is an opening to other pieces that
We'll send Richard a link so that he can listen to this.
Look at the score.
Maybe he will understand it now.
I don't know. Maybe you will. Maybe you will. Maybe he'll start incorporating these techniques into his own work. Wouldn't that be funny?
That would be fun.
Yeah. Federico Ruben, thank you so much for being with me today.
Ophir, my pleasure.
Please do come back.
Yeah, I mean, Esferica is 4 years old already, so...
It's waiting there for a new performance, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be great to have it performed again, because I do agree with you that it's a good piece. I mean, I would love to hear it again in a live performance. This was the only performance that it received. So if there's any, you know, motivated conductors out there who want to take on this task, well, I would, you know, be for it, absolutely.
Well, you know, you can't, if you are a motivated conductor and you're out there and you've got the gem now in your heart, you want to contact Federico Ruben, all you have to do, like everybody else, is just click on the info button, as I said, and you'll have all information for Federico Ruben, contact information, the score for Esferica Cantandote, and much, much more. But I think that I will, after thanking you, just thank our listeners and say until next time, I'll sign off.
This was a very archaeological, almost, program.
Which was really.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, we need one of those every once in a while. Yeah, I assure you that our next one is going to be all about fun, and it's going to be about, you know, it's going to be bikini. Bikini
this,
program.
This was quite, you know, methodical, which... Yeah. No, very, very good. No fear.
It's. I mean, I do come from a Jewish background, and you know, we tend to be methodical, or at least we're supposed to be. But thank you, Federico Ruben. Thank you to our listeners. This is Miofir Olzetsky signing off, and I leave you all with Esferica Cantandote for the last time. Until our next time on An Hour.
Thank you, Ophir.
Thank you, Federico. Thank you.
Thank you. an hour
was an anechoic transmission brought to you by Radio Color.